Are you feeling stressed? Do you need tips and advice on how to get rid of that stress? Well, you happen to stumble upon a particular radio show that can answer all of those two questions. Hi, I'm Ashton Cox, and you're listening to The Chill Pill, the place where you can just sit back and relax. Today's contender of The Chill Pill is a licensed psychotherapist who's been doing what she does for 15 years. Her practice is located in L.A., and she's absolutely static on being here today to inform us on what it's like to be a psychotherapist and how she deals with stress. Without further ado, Christine Aganian.
Hello.
How you doing?
I'm good, thank you. That's very good.
You like that?
Yeah. The intonations of your voice, nice.
I appreciate that very much.
You're welcome.
All right, so what do you want to talk about?
What do you want to talk about?
That's the right response. Okay, so you know what? Let's go ahead and start from the very beginning of it all. The beginning of your career. What made you want to get involved with psychotherapy?
I wish I had a cool story of like, ever since I was a kid,
You can make one up.
Yeah, that would be good, huh? It was right after a shark fight and... it was by default, actually. I had come out with my bachelor's right during a recession in the country. It was during the first Persian Gulf War, and it was really hard to get a job with just a bachelor's at the time. So I thought I had to go back to school and get a master's in order to just figure out how to make a living. And I was racking my brain about what can I do. And I thought, well, you know, I listen well. Might as well get paid for it.
That makes total sense.
So it's totally by default. I don't regret the decision now. But it was not a focused choice the way most other people, you know, choose careers.
Did you have, like, any other options at the
time?
Yeah,
actually, I was my bachelor's was in women's studies. My work was in social activism. So I really wanted to stay in that field. That's what I was trying to work in. But, you know, that wasn't happening at the time.
Is it because of where you were? Or
It was a time in the country. It was a really – it was as if we were back in 2008, right? But this was back in 90-something, long ago. And you weren't going to make a living in social activism. So I was thinking about going back and maybe teaching women's studies or, you know, working that way. But to teach that, you would really have to be ambitious about publishing and academia, which would have been fine. I just, at the time, I didn't think I was that good.
Really?
No, seriously.
So like, you had no confidence in yourself?
None whatsoever, yeah.
That's
but I
tough.
Was a good listener. So I thought, okay, well, let's try that.
I'm a terrible listener. I'm probably going to forget everything. Everything.
That's fine. I'm not requiring that. So you're doing well.
Thank
so that's
you.
How I got into it. And it was hard. It was really hard. All throughout, I kept questioning if I don't regret it now, but all throughout the process.
Are you talking about psychotherapy, like entering that field?
Yeah.
I was about to ask, what were the challenges?
Like, I knew where you were going with that. So I was just
going
to go right
way.
Into it.
Even the listeners know where I'm going, but they just don't know.
So, challenges. You have to do your master's, and then you have to do 3,000 hours of supervised counseling.
That's not a lot.
It's not a lot, but it takes a few years. If you're working at something else to pay your way through those internships, then it takes even longer, and that's why it took so long.
So were you trying to, like, balance a lot of stuff at, like, one time? Because you were interning too, right?
I was. So I was, yeah. I've been licensed for 15 years, but I've been doing this for much longer, 20-something years. Because, you know, you're working as an intern. You're doing therapy as an intern. You're being supervised. You're training. And at the same time, interestingly, I was doing massage that's how I was earning a living.
Maybe you can come back and talk about massage therapy.
No, I think you're going to have another massage therapist
okay.
as a guest.
I have a feeling.
I didn't want to, you know, like, just take over your show.
That'd be funny.
But what was interesting is the correlation, right? So I was doing work with bodies working on maybe stress reduction and mm-hmm. more working on health and healing. And then I was studying all this stuff about doing that with the psyche and seeing a lot of parallels. And it just made a lot of sense to me about mind-body connection. They said no swearing, but they didn't say I can't be dyslexic. that was very interesting. And also what was interesting to me was that prior to this venture, I had been doing a lot of what I would think of as healing work on a grander scale, like a macro level, and like social activism, policy work. And now here I was entering the same phase, but from the micro level, you know, 1% at a time, or the individual. So that also made a lot of sense to me, too. I liked that integration. But back to your topic of stress. Doing therapy is hard. It's there's a lot to learn, and you just never stop learning at it. So in the beginning, you suck. You're really bad. And I knew how bad I was, which is what made it even more difficult.
Why were you bad? What made you think that you were not? Did you think that you were just not suitable at first, or?
Oh, what a good question. I think I was painfully aware of how, you know, the state that people are in and how little I could do to help, yeah, or to be helpful. I mean, and therapy is one of those things where, you know, in many jobs, in many fields, you want to see someone who's young and fresh and they have energy. And when someone is, you know, 30 years into their career, those people are often having difficulty finding jobs because younger people with cutting edge information are more desirable. Therapy is the opposite. I would rather see somebody who's old and wrinkled and has 40 years of experience under their belt because they've seen so much. And each time you work with someone, you learn so much more. And so I knew how green I was, you know, I knew how inexperienced I was. But I stayed at it. And like I said, I'm glad I did now. You know, it was hard. It was a hard road. Yeah.
So going back to what you just said about like having an experienced person, you're talking about like a psychotherapist, correct?
As opposed to
like a younger person who just like entered the field, who just got their credentials and all that.
Right. So I would rather see a psychotherapist who's been licensed for 20 years, 30 years, than someone who's been licensed for 2 years.
Do you feel like it's really hard for people entering this field, like, and they just got their credentials and they're just starting to like do work? Mm-hmm. Do you feel like a lot of people don't want to take a psychotherapist that's very young in the career?
No, actually, there's a place for that because many of us, and this is what I did too, many of us who don't have, let's say, the money to pay for full fee for a therapist, or who don't have the insurance that would allow me to see one, will often end up at an agency, a clinic, or some community center where you're working with somebody who's greener, you know, either an intern or someone who's more newly licensed, who needs to still, let's say, work for a Department of Mental Health, so there's a place for that too. You can afford that as a client. You can afford to pay less at a community clinic. And the therapist will also be then getting experience and getting out their hours there. And, you know, so there's a place for that. No, I don't think it's anything is hard, right? But it's doable.
Okay.
I don't discourage people from going into that.
I feel like this generation of the workforce, like just entering, like, I feel like it's just tougher for them to find work after college.
That's true. Gosh, how true is that? It's I don't know. I don't feel qualified to answer that really well. I think
you don't have to.
It's always okay. I'll answer it really badly then. I think every generation will face difficulties. At times maybe in some ways it's just as hard, but maybe in other ways it's even harder. Certainly there are more people competing for jobs, and fewer jobs available. A lot more automation, a lot more overseas.
I feel like that's true, yeah.
But we're not talking about economics, so.
No, we're not. We're talking about stress.
Although that's stressful, too. They didn't say no banging.
Well, I'm going to say it. No banging.
No banging.
Are you King Kong? All right. I'm going to go back to something that you said about when you were doing massage therapy.
Yeah.
You said that there's a correlation between massage therapy and psychotherapy.
Absolutely.
So what do you think that correlation is? How would you describe that?
Well, I don't think your show's long enough now.
Give me a brief version.
I'll tell you briefly. Mind and body are very much, they're not even connected. They're different facets of the same consciousness. And so they're always working together. Like, think of it more as a spider web where you can't really pull one thread of a spider web without the rest of it being affected, without the rest of it moving. It's all interconnected.
A chain reaction can cause a chain reaction.
It's all connected. And so our bodies are affected by what we do with the psyche. Our psyche is affected by how our body is doing. And then some of the ways you work on stress and healing are similar too. Like, okay, here's one quick example. In massage, even though people love deep massage, you really want to be careful how you do that. If you go in too hard, too fast into the tissue, the body will push back. You'll get the client will get really bruised. Mm. So when you do deep work, you want to be as conscious as possible with the tissue. You want to be really slow, conscientious about what you're feeling under your hands. Make sure that there's give, like the body is yielding to what's happening. Otherwise, there will be a lot of resistance, and it'll be pushback. It won't be what you're looking for. And in therapy, the same thing. Like, you don't want to be intrusive. You have to create a safe environment with a client before we're going to go into vulnerable places. And if you just barrel in too hard with, like, well, you know, who beat you when you were a kid? Like, that's just not going to – there's going to be resistance. There's going to be pushback. And so that's one tiny example of what I was seeing. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for that. Let's just go right to psychotherapy, a little bit more about it. I'm wondering, how do you find like breakthroughs within sessions, like with your clients?
Oh, wow. Like,
what steps do you take?
And what do you even constitute as a breakthrough?
Something that's like they're just thinking differently. Like, you can see that they're a changed person in even like the slightest
in that moment.
Difference.
Yeah. That's what an interesting question. And the answer is even more interesting. You kind of, like, sometimes I will be really surprised by what makes it in. Like, what happens that the client finally goes, oh. Like, and you can tell it's not just an intellectual shift. Like, it's actually felt. And that's really what you're looking for. It's easy to do talk therapy and just do... just intellectually or cognitively work on something. But the breakthroughs that you're talking about are when it goes deeper. And sometimes it's like, it's surprising what actually made its way in. Like, oftentimes people will come back in future sessions and say, yeah, like when you said blah, blah, blah. And I'd be like, that's what you heard? But I don't care. That's fine. Whatever works.
Yeah, whatever works.
Yeah. I also am using EMDR now.
Can you describe what that is? Because I myself have no idea.
Right. So they found that when you introduce, and I don't mean to get technical, when you introduce bilateral stimulation, sensory stimulation, while you're processing, the brain is able to integrate better. So logistically, that means like you might be feeling a vibration. You might be holding some paddles that vibrate alternatively, left, right, left, right, left, right. And you're doing therapy. You're processing in a particular way. And the stress and trauma fragment the psyche. So we dissociate. Like a part of me may keep growing and learning, but another part is still going to be caught in the trauma and the stress of what had happened. And that's very problematic because I think I'm all fine and then something triggers me and all of a sudden I'm acting like an 8-year-old again, having a tantrum or feeling scared or whatever. And EMDR helps us integrate that. So the parts that were fragmented can connect with each other and you catch up with yourself, you know. And I'm saying this very generally and briefly, but I've noticed that these breakthroughs that you talk about happen so much more frequently when I'm doing EMDR with patients, when we're incorporating that into the psychotherapy. Because somehow the mind is able to connect, it's able to link neuronal networks that previously had been disconnected, or even de-link certain ones that shouldn't be connected anymore. And people really feel shift at that point.
All right. You did get a little technical, but it's okay. It's all right. You didn't lose me completely.
Oh,
I'll
good.
Just say that.
Good.
I'm just kidding. Let's see. So.
Stress.
Do you feel like your job has taken a toll on you? Because I hear all the time that, you know, therapists, because they're just like constantly getting just negative stuff thrown at them, and they have to take that onto their shoulders. So do you feel like you?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, you remind me of some a little anecdote I heard years ago about how the highest rate of suicide among doctors was with dentists, and the lowest was with podiatrists. And I mean, who knows if this is even true? I'm just telling the story I had heard. And the way we had made sense of it was that dentists are getting, like, anything they do to you, it hurts and you're stressed. And so when they're dealing with their patients, it's all just, they feel bad that they're...
I've never thought about it
right?
that way.
Whereas podiatrists...
I gotta get my dentist flowers.
Right.
What the heck? Okay.
Whereas podiatrists, whatever they do makes you feel better. This was the whole idea. And so in that same vein... you know, when you're working, no one goes to therapy because they're happy. Everyone, you go to therapy because you're suddenly needing help to deal with stress that is greater than the resources that you have. So everyone is in distress when they're in therapy, and you're dealing with that all day long, and with a lot of different people, right? So this person comes in with their whole story, and you're completely immersed in it, and then the next one and the next one. So yeah, absolutely, there's... Even though I'm not necessarily consciously thinking about a particular person all day long, I know that it has an effect on... I think any healthcare professional would feel that. And that's why there's so much protocol always being talked about for therapists and mental health professionals to work on their own stress and trauma and what they're taking on. Otherwise, you burn out. That's been a big buzzword in the field for a while.
I'm sure there's tons of protocols. I'm sure there's a lot to remember and a lot to deal with. So if you can, like, what would you consider to be, like, the more important pieces?
Oh, okay. So for anyone or for mental health professionals?
For mental health professionals. You dealing with your own stress.
I guess the answer would be the same for anyone. Okay. So... it's always going to be, like you said, there are so many different ways to work with stress. Okay, before I go more into that, how much time do we have? Let me.
Don't worry.
Let me start with this. So think about stress in a couple different ways. Think of it as stressors and the stress that we feel, because they're not the same. Stressors are ubiquitous. They're going to be in everyone's life. And they're going to be there throughout life.
Give me an example.
You're always going to have bills that have to be paid, or someone's upset with you, or whatever is a stressor for you. Maybe someone upset with you is not a stressor for you, but it's a big stressor for me. But there's always going to be crap that I can say that, right? crap happening.
Yes.
That's a stressor coming from outside of us. Or, you know, like an illness or an accident or... what do you call it, things that you're accountable for. But the greater amount of stress that we experience, we create ourselves. It's because of how we're dealing or not dealing with.
A lot of people have said that.
Yeah.
Like a chiropractor has said that, the psychologist that was on, like, it's all like, it's all ourselves. Like, we think too much about it.
And how we cope with it. And so... what was your question? How do I deal with stress? Okay. So... So the reason I'm going here is that one of the big things you want to do, other than, like, you know, take care of your physical health and take care of like get enough sleep, get good nutrition, take care of your social health, don't be isolated. The other thing you want to think about is how are you affecting stress yourself? How are you creating that in your own life? Like, what's unresolved that keeps getting triggered? There's how we deal with stress in the moment. Like driving here, I was caught in so much traffic and I could feel the stress rising, and I had to just like tell myself, breathe, find perspective, it's going to be fine, don't get into an accident. There's stress that you deal with in the moment, and then there's underlying unresolved issues that can become stressors. Like, if we were talking about self-esteem a minute ago, or confidence, those kinds of things that we don't quite deal with that then come up later. So the big answer to what you're asking is do your work, do your own psych therapy, do your own, whether it's therapy or not.
Be in control of yourself, in other words.
Do the work that you're asking your patients to do. You know, I think, first of all, therapists should definitely do that. Like, know what it's like to be a patient. It makes you such a better therapist, you know?
That makes total sense.
Oh, God, yeah. And you don't have to do it forever, but periodically go back in because it gives you a different perspective. And work through your stuff on an ongoing basis, because the more you're conscious of yourself, the better you practice with others in therapy. And in life, too, the more you're aware of yourself and what's going on inside and what's motivating you this way or that way, the more you can regulate what's happening from inside. I think that's like the number one thing, is being conscious. But, I'm sorry, go on. I don't mean to hijack the session. Keep
that's
going.
All right.
It's not
that's
even
all right.
A session. Oh, my God. There's a...
Like I said, I'd rather have someone who can't stop talking than someone who can't say a word. That's just the ideal guest right there.
There you go.
And you've been great. You've been great.
Glad.
We have like, I don't even know, like, four more minutes, about three more minutes.
Yeah. Okay.
We're going to switch gears.
Yeah.
And I wish we had more time for this, but let's talk about your practice. So it's in LA, right?
It is.
Okay. Yeah. What is the name of your practice?
Oh, there's no name. It's just me.
It's just you?
My name, yeah.
So Christine Aganian, everybody.
Aganian, yeah.
Yeah, Aganian. Uh-huh. Aganian.
Yeah.
All right. And how long have you had that practice for?
So right now I'm working mostly out of an office in Toluca Lake, and I think I've been there for 6 years, maybe? Yeah, since 2012. So, I also work a little bit out of Pasadena. I was in a Pasadena office prior to that. I see adults. It's not my wheelhouse to work with children and families, so there are other people much better suited for that.
Well, your license is a LMFT, which is a licensed marriage and family therapist.
Yes.
So you're mostly dealing with older.
I'm dealing with adults. That license allows you to deal with anyone, you know, families, children, if as long as you have the proper training. And like I said, it's not my wheelhouse. I know many people who have studied that more and just have a much better knack for working with family systems. So I deal with adults and individuals and couples.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And your website, is that your own website?
It
that
is.
Supported?
Mm-hmm.
Did you get that after the practice? Like, when was that introduced?
Yeah, I think when I started, probably around the time that I moved to Toluca Lake, I had that set up, or maybe just before that, too.
Okay.
Because that's where we're doing everything digitally now, right?
Yeah, it helps. As many places as you can get, you know?
Yeah.
SupportiveTherapyLA.com.
Right.
Is there like a number on there that people can reach to contact you and stuff?
Yes, yeah, the phone number is there.
Okay. Anything else before we end? I really hate that we are ending right now.
Oh, that's fine. So about stress, I would go back to the more we know ourselves, the easier it is to regulate our stress from inside. Yeah. That's my message.
All right.
I'm sticking to it.
Well, thank you so much. We're done. So we learned what a psychotherapist does, how psychotherapy works, and multiple ways that a psychotherapist can help relieve stress in one's life. All thanks to the help of Christine Aganian, everybody. Thank you again, Christine, for coming out here today to talk the talk.
Thank you, Ashton. It's been fun.
I am glad to hear that. Mm-hmm. I am your host, Ashton Cox, and you are listening to The Chill Pill on KPCRadio.com. See you later, alligators.